Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Lukes here at The Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome my guests from the other side of the world. Welcome, Mark Anderson.
Hello, Arnie. Great to be back.
No worries. Pleased to have you, Mark. And Robert Klink from your sickbed. Welcome back, Robert Klink.
Yeah, good to see you, Arnie. I haven't been here for 3 weeks, I think, so I hope I can catch up tonight.
No worries.
Make
always
a contribution.
No worries. Always most welcome, Robert. And Wallace Klink. Welcome, Wallace Klink.
Hi, Arnie. Good to be with you again. We're having a little bit of a tumultuous series of weather events here in Alberta, especially during in the southern half of the province. We've had a lot of tornado activity, which, of course, is not exactly welcomed. Oh. I talked to a lady in Los Angeles once, but who had previously lived in Kansas, and she said she would rather have an earthquake any day than a tornado.
Wow. Wow. There you go. Yeah. I mean, in the southern hemisphere, especially, you know, around Australia, it's to the north that we have the cyclones. We call them cyclones, tornadoes, extreme low pressure events, circular motion. Whereas, of course, you've got different phenomena in a sense, in a slightly drier or whatever, not so wet situation, but still just as destructive. And yeah, it is quite intimidating, the power of nature over the earth, over ourselves, and even over our buildings. And of course, you consider the actually building multi-story buildings, they've got to take into account, even bridges got to take into account the effect that wind has. Of course, that's considered in regard to the natural world. We've got to take these things into account. Okay. Today's forum, The Great Reset. This is a continuation of the Davos World Economic Forum, if you like, design or their program for a world government, a world communist dictatorship. Now, I'm going to cut across to newspapers and some websites. So The Australian is mostly concerned with Victoria. It's going back into lockdown. And, of course, it really is most of these discussions, most of these articles are about the lockdown, COVID-19. Now, on our front page, Australian League of Rights, we've got the three videos, which is really a stop press area of the most current and important, if you like, political news events that are going on. The middle video is in regard to a video footage that I captured from Collin County. And this is that captured footage on YouTube, and it's actually showing, it doesn't show it here for the 3rd of July, but it's currently tracking around 400 views. For us, that's the most views of any video that we've put up, and all I did was capture this discussion of Collin County, of their court, the Commissioner's Court. Really is important, because in that discussion, it's actually the criteria of determining COVID-19. This in itself is a news event. Your thoughts, please, Mark Anderson.
Yeah, I live in Texas part of the year, of course, and Collin County, Texas is a county just northeast of Dallas in the Plano area. And it's a very, very densely populated area. So it's not some podunk or boondock area with, you know, a one-horse town and half a post office and two cars. There's a lot of people that live there, so it's very relevant for them to talk about so-called contagions and, you know, transmittable diseases, quote unquote. And May 18th, take the note the date. Back on May 18th, 2020, the Collin County Board heard from one of its top health officials in the epidemiology department. And her name, Aisha Sori, she reported to the Collin County Board. And what she reported, as this video shows firsthand, this is nothing doctored or nothing derivative, nothing unauthentic at all. This is firsthand, authentic, official video footage from that May 18 meeting. And it shows that they have what are now called probable cases coming down from the Texas Health Department to the counties. Texas is a big place, of course. There are 254 counties in Texas. to give you a comparison, there's 83 counties in Michigan and 92 counties in Indiana, 254 counties, and Collin County was one of those counties that received this state directive where now they have probable cases of COVID-19 alongside so-called confirmed cases. The confirmed cases, as they explain, are done with the PCR test, which itself is not reliable, as the inventor of the PCR test himself has went on record saying. But nevertheless, they have that one so-called confirmed test, and then from that, they extrapolate with what are called probable cases, and they simply add the probable cases to the case count. Now, all those probable cases do not have a lab result, do not have the test. So they are ginning up and inflating the case count by several orders of magnitude here. So for every so-called confirmed case, at a minimum, they're adding 15 or 16 probable cases. So you're getting 17 cases, let's say, or 16 cases for every confirmed case, totaling 17. But that's just one scenario. Other scenarios, you could have one so-called confirmed case and have 40 added that are so-called probable. And so the numbers are vastly inflated and completely unreliable. And to add insult to injury, they now have the criteria whereby the COVID death counts in that county, and therefore throughout Texas, do not even require a lab result to confirm COVID-19. Prior to that, you did have to. And prior to the probable cases, they had to have every case be confirmed with the PCR test, even though it's unreliable. So they've changed this, abandoning where they have to have a test in each case, a so-called confirmed test, confirming a death or confirming a case. So they're abandoning that and allowing everything to be just supposition, just a subjective judgment. And then on top of that, and I'll wind up here, they have these other criteria where you can have major or minor symptoms, and of the minor symptoms, you have to have two. Of the major symptoms, you have to have one. And they can just say, well, then you're COVID-19 without a test and call it probable. And of those minor symptoms, they have the fever, and the fever can be subjective where they don't even use the thermometer anymore.
Yeah.
No, so you can see it's completely subjective and unscientific.
Yeah. No, that's a very profound observation, and we appreciate your comment there, Mark. And I'd encourage our viewers to actually look at the website and go and seek out that Collin County Commissioner's Court and listen to it for yourself. 45 minutes I've placed 45 minutes of a 2-hour meeting there, specifically about the assessment criteria for COVID-19. So obviously it's essentially a fabrication. The actual case numbers is a fabrication, certainly. And then on top of that is the morbidity, when you've got such a vague, if you like, criteria, an assessment criteria, such a vague and loose grouping or identification, when in actual fact it's just completely unsatisfactory that we're having this lockdown as a consequence of it. Now, I would point out that the fatality, the morbidity rate in Australia for COVID-19 stands, as of yesterday, 107. Now, 101 years ago, 1919, we had the Spanish influenza come through Australia. We had a population of 5 million. We had between 12 and 15,000 deaths from this influenza, 12 and 15,000 in Australia. Now, based on our 26 million current population, to have a same ratio or consideration of ratio between the morbidity of COVID-19 and the Spanish influenza, today COVID-19 is 1, and then Spanish influenza is 600. It's a ratio of 1 to 600. So, and that's in Australia. And I believe as you say, Mark, even the reliability of the test to identify it aren't infallible. They're just an indicator, but certainly not infallible. So that even those statistics are not completely and totally irrefutable. Your thoughts, please, Robert Klink. Can you hear me, Robert?
Yes, I really don't understand how I hear you fine. Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, go for it.
You can't hear me.
I can hear you. Keep going.
Oh, okay. I don't understand how people can be falsifying death certificates. Maybe they can play with the incidence of cases, but it has to be a criminal offense to falsify a death certificate. So I don't conceive of them getting away with this. And I really don't understand why somebody isn't lodging a formal complaint against the falsification of these records. It's quite an astonishing thing, surely. We've had the same thing in Canada. The government has issued similar instructions for loosey-goosey accounting of cases and deaths. You know, if you die and you have, I'm not sure if they have to prove the corpse has had COVID or not, but there's no requirement to prove that the person has died of COVID. If you have it in your system, then that's enough to warrant registering it as a COVID death. Mm. So the same thing I know has happened in the UK. So it's another one of these world policies. You know, we already have world government. All these policies are coming through on a standard universal approach. It's something that's really mind-boggling.
Yeah.
But I understood too from a presentation by a former university professor in Canada. He was destroyed by the president of his university because he was an independent thinker. But he's done a study, and he has pretty well destroyed Bill Gates's argument that 7 or 8 billion people will have to be vaccinated in order for this COVID to be overcome, because it's not a uniform problem throughout the world. It varies according to climate conditions. And for example, it's not going to wreak havoc in Africa, because Africa is a consistently hot country, and they don't have the same problems as we've had in northern climates when we go through these flu seasons. So all the rationales and justifications for these policies are just concoctions. And what we're witnessing, I think, is just a great theater production. That's all it is. There is some kind of a director behind the operation who is instructing the phases of the disease will be, and the phasing in and the phasing out, and requiring institutions to, you know, who seem to have everybody on the end of an elastic. They let you out of it, and then they draw you back. And now they're differentiating locales within political jurisdictions so they can keep this thing going forever. But it's just a grand show. A theater production, as I say.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for that, Robert. That's a very important observation. And obviously there's got to be a purpose behind it. You don't just put on a show, you don't just control the entire world unless there's design or there's intent, policy. And of course that policy is world government. It's essentially tearing up our constitutions, and we are receiving directives from a, if you like, a foreign body, a foreign power, public and private partnerships. Of course, these World Health Organizations, they're where industry and government come together in order to pursue policy. In the 30s, it was described as fascism, where government and industry came together. Fascism. Controlling a nation, and now essentially we have international fascism. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Clink.
Well, I don't think there's, in my opinion, at least any doubt that this is not just a show, but I think it is a grand experiment in influencing the public by suggestion. it's a manipulation of the psychology of the peoples to see how amenable they are to having their behavior modified by suggestion. And it's a rather sophisticated, can be, I'm sure, a rather sophisticated form of propaganda and misleading of populations. It's quite a profound sort of thing. In a way, it's, I don't think there's any doubt. I've said before, I said the closer you get to the American election, I'm quite sure you're going to get increased outbreaks of this thing, and maybe even quite extreme. Because there is a high, even if it exists, and if it does, I don't think it, from what I've been able to learn, I don't think it's a very serious virus. And I think what you have to be concerned about is the purpose, as you say, Arnie. There is a purpose to a reaction, or there should be if you're sane. And I think that the people who are behind this centralization of world power, they are sane in a sense, but I think there is a sense in which they're certainly misguided, possibly insane, in thinking that centralizing power in the world is a way to shape or form a successful civilization. It's not, because initiative always derives from the individual. Mobs, populations do not have a creative mind. They are made up of individuals, and if you can do anything to shape or misdirect or to direct those conscious minds, those individual minds, then you pretty well got control of the entire society and ultimately civilization. Arnie, I think the important thing is for us to concentrate on is the actual implications and results that will flow from this sort of thing, from this COVID campaign. It's the campaign itself, I mean, is not nearly, and especially as the virus itself has been reported repeatedly as not being a serious virus. It's not really a critical thing. Most people have is alleged to be a very high recovery rate. But what you have to be concerned about is what are people in power doing as a consequence of the virus and the actual or alleged attempt to deal with it. Mm-hmm. The implications in terms of measures taken to control human activity, human thought and purpose. That is what we have to be especially concerned because that is the actual intent of the entire thing. It's to create a controllable population that is subject to memes and suggestions and so that there's an automatic response, psychological response to a certain keywords and key situations. So it is an instrument of world tyranny. That's what it is. Yeah. We as human beings are independent creatures. We have independent minds. We have independent thought processes, capacity for thought. And if that can be hijacked, if you want, by some psychological manipulative means to control us, then we're facing world tyranny, effectively. And it's an extremely dangerous thing. Now, what something will have to be done in order to counter it, because otherwise the whole purpose of humanity is pretty well scotched.
Yeah. No, thank you for that, Wally. That's it's a profound observation, and I appreciate it. Mark Anderson, your continued thoughts, please.
Well, one thing I can mention here is that me and a friend this week coming, are going to be calling some state governments, Texas, Michigan, et cetera. One thing we need to determine, and I'll give you guys an update when I determine it, is whether what we heard in Texas in Collin County is in fact happening in other states, and is it in fact uniform throughout the United States. I'm going to surmise that it largely is, but that's speculation. We're going to try and find that out and nail that down irrefutably. Mm-hmm. And in the process, register some comments and complaints to state and county governments in Michigan, state and county governments in Texas, as well as California, Arizona, and other states, which mysteriously, but not so mysteriously, have seen a spike in cases, basically in conjunction with the Collin County revelation. Notice that that was on May 18th, and then in the U.S. Memorial Day holiday at the end of May, we began to see something of a spiking going up. And then by the time the Independence Day holiday for the United States rolled around on July 4, the spikes were really high, they said. And what other logical or plausible explanation is there other than what we heard in Collin County? So that's why it's important in my news work and as a citizen, I want to determine if in fact Collin County is representative not only of the state of Texas, as we know it pretty much is, but of the whole nation or most of the United States. And in fact, might that be the exact same criteria for, let's say, Canada, and so on and so forth. So complaints and inquiries and confirming this and how widespread that technique is that we found in Collin County, all of that's going to be determined as soon as possible within the next, let's say, 2 to 4 days.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. Thank you, Mark, that the that investigative reporting is not finished. It's actually happening and pursuing these threads in order to come to a complete conclusion. If it's an escalation of real numbers, then there's a concern. But if it's a fabrication based on a new criteria, which is exactly what it sounds like, then obviously the concern is not the actual illness, the disease, the whatever you want to call it, the virus. That's not the threat. What is the threat is, of course, is tyrannical government imposing lockdown on entire cities in Australia, previously entire states. And I note that the Victorian New South Wales border is closed. The South Australian border is closed to Victoria. So these things are unprecedented in the history of Australia. Our government is doing it on morbidity of 107 people in Australia, in a factor of 1 to 600 as to the same sort of virus threat to what happened 101 years ago, 1 to 600. 101 years ago, the morbidity was 600 times as great in comparison to per head of population. Your thoughts, please, Robert Klink.
Well, Wally was talking about how we're subject to psychological manipulation. This is hardly a new thing, and I recommend very seriously that everybody should do a little bit of research into Edward Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew. He was involved in the First World War in the Psychological Warfare Department in the United States, and he came out of that war with a conviction that rather than applying those methods only in time of war, you could do it in time of peace. And he organized the most incredible campaigns. He had clients among the biggest corporations in the United States who were all applying to him to get assistance to sell their products. He got support early on from the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, and the Roosevelts. He was behind the campaign to fluoridate water. He was behind a massive campaign to get women to take up smoking. And in order to do this, he encouraged the feminist movement. So he labeled cigarettes torches of freedom. Consistently with the expression of women to do whatever they wanted to be themselves. he even persuaded the American public that the typical breakfast they should be eating is bacon and eggs, and this was all done for corporate commercial purposes. So we can see, and he was absolutely convinced that the public was just a mush that could be directed as clever psychologists wanted, and we can see that it's happened. So the idea that suddenly we're subject to an attack that is unprecedented in this COVID thing is hardly true. It's just an extension of all this previous activity. And it's a confirmation of the fact that the methods that Edward Bernays and his colleagues developed still work. That's why you have very, very significant willing participation in all these silly rules that are coming down. You know, they're doing all this micromanaging. From day to day, the rules change, and apparently you're supposed to be listening to the latest thing from the political authority in your region. I don't know how these people are able to follow things in a scientific way so that they can tell you what you have to do tomorrow. It's just nonsense, the whole business. Yeah. So if people could be made immune to this psychological manipulation by becoming aware of the fact of what has been done in the past in this area and how it continues today, then they could be set free. You know, Edward Bernays wanted to control people for the purposes of corporations and so on. Jesus said, the truth will make you free. So Christianity has the purpose of setting people free by giving them the truth. And these guys want to enslave them by instilling all sorts of false notions in their heads on the basis of psychological manipulation. And COVID is just another instance of that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate that, Robert. And I also highlight to our audience that in Australia, we've only just come out of the terror of the bushfire season. Hello, we have bushfires every year. And if you don't burn off the undergrowth, then that's what happens. We know the rules. And of course, there's a strong influence within our government not to burn off the undergrowth. And then, of course, we have firestorms. So it's a direct consequence of policy. It's an outworking of policy. So the terror of fires. And then, of course, you've got the terror of climate. And that's unrelenting. And I would point out to our audience, just to throw a spanner in the works on this whole climate thing, that since late March, early April, the world has been shut down. April, May, June, there's 3 months has gone by. And... 3 months, the industry hasn't been working at full capacity, nothing like it. It's been shut down. And are you seeing a drop in CO2? Are you seeing it? No, you're not. If you go to scientific publications and the outlets that are monitoring this, there's no drop in CO2. It's a natural phenomena. The CO2 is continuing to climb as it has done. In the ancient records, they've shown it, they've demonstrated in science that this goes back through the ice cores and things like that. They've shown that CO2 was much higher than it is today. And so we've got to really consider this idea, this fear that's being instilled in us, whether it's COVID-19, whether it's climate, whether it's bushfires, whether it's the war on terror. These are all things in order to control us and to bring about policy by other means. Your thoughts, please, Wallace Klink.
Well, I think to make it simple, bring it down to a simple explanation, I think it is basically a modern application of primitive witchcraft. You try to use fear to influence the thoughts of your victim. And you can get your victim to do amazing things when under that type of stress. And I think that's basically what it is. It's a form of, and I think that, the whole ethic that we live by, the economic ethic that implies that we're living, like the earth is a very unfriendly place, and we're all going to have to pull together and do a lot of things that we wouldn't do otherwise in order to try and survive this dangerous environment. And some people are just pushing this for all it's worth. So it's, I think it's just a big psychological thing, and I think that somehow we are going to have to. I mean, it is ingrained in our entire ethos, our ethic. We believe in work. Why do we believe in work? Because there's great scarcity and we must work hard, not only to overcome current scarcity, but to protect yourself against the possibility of further scarcity. We can afford to completely destroy, well, not completely, but devastate the continent of Europe twice in the last century and maintain forever a program of geared basically toward, well, the economy is highly dependent upon production of the mechanism or the machines of war or destruction. And so, but we live in a, but we're supposed to live being threatened by actual scarcity. It's a form of psychological illness. There's something wrong. It's completely mad. So, I mean, but it does one thing. It frightens people. It controls them. They're afraid, first most, of their basic living, which they cannot acquire unless they're engaged in a job somewhere, working for someone at some, you know, for some purpose which may or may not have any real significance for the human race at all. But they have to have it because they get a monetary income. And a monetary income in the modern economy is necessary because contracts are fulfilled by money. We don't operate by just exchange of goods and services. We settle our obligations by contract. And so this is the one aspect of it. Anyway, it's just, and there's a moral aspect that drives it. You're no good as a person unless you work, and that you work very hard, and that although you thought maybe your work might have freed you, you find out that it didn't. Mm. In fact, the burden becomes greater and greater, the defect in the price system, which Douglas clearly defined. It's not very difficult. Your industry is generating costs and prices at a greater volume over time than it is distributing incomes, because incomes are wages, salaries, and dividends. As we know, anyone who's in business on a most elementary level knows that you have increasing overhead costs, which have nothing to do with immediate labor in this cycle of production. It's all past. So that you're only distributing a shrinking portion of the amount of income that is necessary for you to purchase what is being produced and in order to gain the means of livelihood in a real sense. So it's, you know, it's pretty obvious. How is a consumer going to buy if the consumer doesn't have enough effective monetary income to match the prices that are being generated in respect of the goods that are emanating from production? I mean, how do people buy things? Mm-hmm. They don't buy it with their incomes today. They buy it with their future incomes, which have got nothing to do with today's production. In other words, they go into debt, and they go into debt more and more and more as individuals and as governments, as institutions. We're all going more into debt because we cannot live on our current income, so we have to borrow against our future income. But in the future, we have to do the same thing, so it doesn't get better, it just gets worse. And as a matter of fact, the financial system literally sabotages the physical production system. It sabotages the efficiencies that we actually develop in terms of real production, because we have an increasing burden of debt and inflation, and that means that we're not really getting ahead from a standpoint of books or accountancy. In fact, we're falling behind. But we think we're getting ahead if we've got jobs. So as long as we've got more work to do, not really considering, you know, from a standpoint of quality, qualitative standpoint, whether the work is necessary, desirable, or even wanted, we have to do it because we have to get enough money to go back and buy what we produced in a prior cycle of production, when we should have been able to claim what's coming off the market right now. Mm-hmm. It should always be that the consuming public should be able to inquire what is emanating from the productive system on a physical level. We can't do that because we have a grossly defective and increasingly defective system of industrial cost accountancy and debt finance through the banking system.
Thank you, Wallace. That's very important that we actually place, if you like, a clear observation of the phenomena of why it is so important for us to consider. We've got to actually put, if you like, a discipline of thinking into the current scenario. Our governments are providing our handouts under this COVID-19. Our governments, they're creating money. They're just creating money out of nothing, and they're issuing it to individuals to keep businesses, small businesses afloat, but certainly the big players going, and the individuals so that they can get enough, if you like, almost subsistence, existence to keep going under this lockdown. Government is forcing the lockdown. Government is the, if you like, providing the answer to the lockdown with new credits. And so government is making itself totally indispensable. Essentially, that's what totalitarianism is all about. You don't have a choice. You've got to go cap in hand to them. And that's why it is so, so wrong that the bounty of the world, the two significant industrial revolutions that, two significant, possibly even three, but the first was, of course, labor coming together, increment of association. The second was the mechanical under the steam energy. The third, of course, was under electrical energy. And that, of course, continues in a sophisticated manner for advanced control and robotics. And yet the financial system has not been adjusted or altered or changed to suit this new phenomena. So labor becomes less and less and less. And we can't dig our way, we can't borrow our way out of debt. Debt becomes irredeemable. And this is the big picture analysis of COVID-19. Who benefits out of it? World government. This is the purpose of it, the intention, the design behind this policy. Your thoughts and closing comments, please, Mark Anderson.
Yeah, this segue into social credit has definitely broadened the discussion. I think that we could talk tactics might be really important here to really elucidate what's going on. In Wisconsin, and a little bit less so, but still in Illinois and in Hillsborough County, Florida, there's been some pretty significant pushback with judges in Illinois and Wisconsin ruling against the governors, ruling against their lockdowns. And in Hillsborough County, Florida, they're saying individual store owners and clerks and staffers in restaurants and different businesses are not law enforcement. It is not their job to go telling customers what they can and can't do, telling customers whether they should or should not wear a mask. And so there's some very promising things legally going on in the U.S. that are providing some pushback to put these governors, these lockdown governors, in check, tell them they cannot do this, tell them they cannot just continually pass executive orders without their legislatures properly taking place, without the legislatures making law. So the governors are being told, you cannot make law, that's up to legislatures, your lockdown is overbearing, it's unconstitutional, you can't just keep passing executive orders. And in Florida, again, they're saying, they're applying the lawsuit saying store clerks are not law enforcement. You cannot have them barking orders at their customers. So the legal pushback here is very important because that can create room and time. And then we can begin to look at an adaptation of social credit. And COVID-19, as we've talked about before, has done us some favors. Closing down the public schools and increasing homeschooling is a good thing. Creating more local agriculture because people are concerned about the food supply, more gardening, more resilience in the food supply, and a healthier food supply is a good thing. And then now we see the governments are issuing credit. It's just that they're issuing it as debt. If they were not issuing it as debt and they had something like a social credit formula, then the issuance of credit morphs into a good thing. And then we no longer have this, you must work, this command and control system where everyone is controlled by the work system, not just welfare, but by the work system, and they're afraid to rock the boat. Nobody wants to step out of formation. Nobody wants to raise their hand and say this is wrong, because all these nurses and doctors and people in the medical and pharmaceutical systems, let's face it, they don't want to lose their jobs because we've created this defective economy where the only way to get money, unless you steal, is to work continuously and endlessly with or without a good purpose. So if we can break that logjam and create a social credit system, then people would no longer be beholden to their jobs as their only source of income. We instead would have a debt-free, interest-free national dividend under the social credit system. You wouldn't have to work as much, if at all. We'd have leisure. And then people could speak out and they could run for office. They could be more effective if they're already in political office, and they could, without fear of consequence, without fear of losing their job or income and their livelihoods, they could say COVID-19 is wrong. These medical statistics are being inflated. You would see all sorts of people in the system speaking out and saying, we're not going to support this fraud anymore. But absent those changes, everyone is in lockstep and is afraid to step out of formation. And that's how the work system, working for its own sake, works. That's how it controls people. As Bob has said off the air, it's the most ingenious form of social control ever devised, telling people that they're the only way to earn a living or the only way to get income is to work. And then, therefore, no one wants to lose their job. Therefore, they won't speak out against their boss or their boss's boss or their boss's boss's boss, and certainly not against the almighty state, which has the taxing arm, the Internal Revenue Service. So you see the immediate problem to push back and get these governors back on their heels, to get them to understand that they can't do this, and that'll buy us some time to then talk about these longer-term changes.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Mark Anderson, very, very important points there. Your thoughts and closing comments, please, Robert Klink.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree with Mark, and I hope that people will be jolted into an understanding of what a grip this financial system has on the throats of every individual, certainly even the wealthy. Anybody can be destroyed, you know, if they're targeted. So we have all people trying to survive by getting a job and being good little boys and girls, not making waves. This is not living as a human being. A human being should be expressing themselves, should be following their own consciences, but it's virtually impossible in the system that's been imposed on us. So I hope that the disappointment people must feel in their medical establishment, in their policing establishment, because of the fact that it hasn't protected them when they were hoping it would. You know, the expectation was there's virtue in these organizations, but when push comes to shove, practically everybody kowtows to their superiors because they risk losing their jobs. It'll punish them, it'll punish their families. So it's so critical that people grasp the importance of moving to a system in which people have a source of income that is unconditional, that is related to the productive capacities of their economy, which are enormous everywhere. We never see the reflection of that because of the financial system that's been imposed upon us. But we're in a situation now where the light could come on and people could visualize a different way of doing things. I'll just add too, you know, that the world economy has been shut down, and that sort of came as a big surprise to everybody. But a Canadian, Maurice Strong, who is the genius behind the climate change movement, said back at the Paris conference, I think it was that in 1990, he said in order to deal with the threat of climate change, it will probably be necessary to shut down the economies of the industrialized nations. And they've done it. Mm-hmm. We see it today.
Yeah, no, thank you for that, Robert. Very, 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 very good summary. I've actually got something to present to you. I'm getting a bit of feedback on this. I want to just take us to this website. And it is the ALOR website. And this is the modules, the five modules, social credit. And I want to read something here. It's over 60 years since C.H. Douglas advised his readers that they must bring into their consciousness the type of world they want and to realize that they alone can obtain it. Not in detail, but in objective. First, freedom of action, thought, and speech. We need security in what we have, already have. Second is the need to face the encroachments of bureaucracy. That's what we're tasting. This is the encroachments of bureaucracy. And of course, the threat of taxing and irritating restrictions. And the third is to obtain control of the forces of the Crown or the forces of government. These are the three targets that Douglas himself set before, if you like, the world, set before the Christians to consider. These were the most important. These were the most important. So, Mark, you mentioned it. You know, if only we could put this sort of, if you like, visualization of what should be. You've mentioned it too, Robert, and so have you, Wally, of what it should be and how do we go about. Well, we've got the targets, we've got the objectives. They're actually set before us. And, of course, no more profoundly than in those beautiful words, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." So we really do have a commission, a bold commission to take civilization forward, not to fall back, not to be concerned about holding on, but actually to take civilization forward and to take the next big step in civilization. Some of the stepping stones, of course, were Magna Carta, habeas corpus, trial by jury, limited constitutional government. This is the next big civilizational step, and it is before us all. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for today. It's been a beaut forum, and hopefully we'll have to do a bit of stitching with the editing, but hopefully it'll work out. So cheers again.